The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Ready, Set, Spill. I'm Lindsay Carter, the founder and CEO of Set Active, a new mother and the host of Ready, Set, Spill. So I know you're a Texas girl at heart.
I am.
Also lived in big cities like LA, now DC.
Mm-hmm.
What is the best of each city?
So oddly enough, I feel like, so Fort Worth, Texas, where I grew up, from like age 12 to 18, that has like, it's bigger than Austin. It's a pretty large city. It does have like a suburban vibe though. We were very much like country club to our little private school. Everything's like fenced off. It was like the perfect little idyllic place. What I liked about that is just like baseline. It's just like not inspiring or anything, but just like safety. I felt very safe there.
Yeah.
My whole family was there. It's like quaint and it's comfortable and very convenient, very easy. And I won't say I love how slow things are, but it's sometimes nice to have things like that slow and very family oriented.
Yeah.
When I was younger, so my dad was a fighter pilot and we used to move every like 2 years.
Oh my God.
So I was born on an Air Force base in Panama City, Florida. And then we lived on the coast of Florida for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, that place is absolutely stunning. Like Seaside is where I kind of spent my younger years. And I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's like white sand, clear blue water. We lived at one point in a condo on the beach and my dad would like go dogfight. So like they'd like get ready for, you know, their different combat missions over the bay. And like you could like hear the jets going and then see them coming back. And like the water, we'd watch the dolphins jump in the morning. Like that was very idyllic as well.
Oh my God.
And I also lived in Houston, Texas for a little while, which the best people that I know live in Houston. So that's like Texas for me and Florida for me, that whole kind of time of my life was safe and idyllic. And I grew up in different socioeconomic levels and lived around a bunch of different types of people as my parents kind of went from being like, my mom was 21 when she had me to like getting older and like making money. And, you know, we're not living on an Air Force base anymore, but all of that has a similar vein of like family first. It was very slow. It was really focused on like what the kids wanted to do. And we had a lot of friends running around like barefoot in the neighborhood.
I love that. Mm-hmm. That's a big reason why where I chose to live now with my husband and our soon to be two kids is because I grew up with that sort of like not dolphins jumping in the air.
That doesn't even make sense. I remember we moved to Houston after I lived in Florida and we were like, my parents took me to a beach in Houston. I think I was 8. I started sobbing, crying because I couldn't see through the water. I was like, what the can I cuss on your, is there cussing allowed?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck's going on? I was like, I'm not getting in water. I can't see through. That's insane. I was so spoiled with the water.
I don't know if it's like a spoiled thing necessarily. Maybe for your story it is.
Yeah.
But like I don't know why this conversation has come up oddly enough in like the last couple of weeks. But I always tell people like I can only swim in clear water beaches, not because I'm a spoiled bitch, but because I need to see what's under
me. Terrified.
Yeah.
We went to the Bahamas like a couple weeks ago, my boyfriend and I. And one thing I also realized I need, which I didn't know I needed before, is the resort we were at was a really nice resort. So they took the time to put like a huge net around their private beach so no fish or anything could come in. And I was like, that's what I need. That's
so
like the level of spoiled.
The name of this resort down.
It was the Four Seasons. It was obviously stunning, but it was very quaint and little. And I was like, why am I not nervous about like, I've not seen a fish. I haven't seen anything like that was going to freak me out. And they're like, oh, we've netted it off for y'all. So you don't feel like a shark may come and like,
oh my God,
just like bite you or something. And I'm like, I mean, as not realistic as that is, I will think about it the whole time. So yeah.
I'm the same way. Okay, well, what about LA? Curious to see what you say because I've lived here my whole life.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
I guess I gleaned that information and I feel like I guess because you went to U of A.
I was born and raised in LA.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Most of my friends in LA were born and raised in LA, actually.
That's good. That's good for you.
Yeah,
because
it's good
the people
for me.
Who are transplants who like all of a sudden say they're
from
LA.
A little questionable.
Or, yes.
So what I liked about LA, which was different from my hometown, and most places I lived before, is that people here, and this is kind of like something people will complain about LA, is people here are in their own business so much that they don't care what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one's really going out of their way to, like, ruin your life, for example. Like, in small towns, like, people are up your ass, and they know everything, and everything is a thing. Like, I always tell my friends, like, if I go home and I wear a shirt where, like, my nipple line, like, you can see through it a little bit. Not like the color of the nipple, literally just the outline.
Okay.
Oh, we're talking. There's texts being exchanged. Moms are mad. It is drama. And I mean, especially living downtown in LA for a little while. I mean, I could walk down the street butt-ass naked.
Yeah, no one.
And people might be like, oh, there's a naked girl or something. Because I have personally seen naked people downtown. And, like, I've had moments where, like, it's me and a construction worker who, like, exchange a glance. And we're like, is this really happening? And then we just keep walking. And, like, no one cares. You know what I mean? Oh. And then I feel very free in Los Angeles.
Okay.
So I loved living here for that. Obviously, the weather.
Yeah.
And there's an energy about the city. I love New York City so much. And that's, like, my favorite energy ever.
Totally.
But this has... I won't say it's the same at all, but it's a very similar thing where everyone's kind of doing their own thing. You move here, if you do move here as a transplant, you have some kind of like dream or like specific idea, and you move to LA for a purpose. You don't just kind of move here being like, I'm going to settle down and like raise some kids or something. You know what I mean? You kind of move here for a reason. I feel like it makes everyone a little bit exciting to meet.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, especially because, you know, I literally born and raised here. I could not picture myself living anywhere ever in my life. But now you live in D.C.
I live in D.C. very briefly. We're only living there. My boyfriend plays baseball. So we're living there for the baseball season, which ends in September.
Then what?
There's drama. So we bought a house in Dallas.
Okay.
And we lived there on the off season last year. We were thinking, okay, we're going to live near family because if we're going to, you know, get engaged, we're going to have kids. Like, we want to be by people who can help us. And the taxes are so great in Texas. So we were like, we're going to do that. He ended up getting injured and had surgery elsewhere, which I haven't told anyone we're moving yet in October. But it's a very exciting place. I'm really excited about it. But it's where his surgeon is. And that might give it away. But
it's where his surgeon is.
Yeah. His surgeon is somewhere and he needs to go rehab where that is. And so we built this Dallas house. It was perfect down to like the shoes being put in like the various sizes of my shoes. The shelving is built for that. I perfected 5 closets.
Oh,
I had
an
office space. I had like a little podcast recording studio.
So what are you going to do? It's not, you're going to sell the house?
We're selling the house. And I recently just said that part on the internet. So we're selling the house. We're not moving to Dallas at all. We thought we were going to be there in the off season for the next forever. But it's actually a blessing in disguise. I mean, of course, when Joe told me all of this and was like, I need to be here for the off season, you know, whatever, I was like shook because he just like kind of blindsided me because he went to work one day and came back and was like, I'm hurt. This is what we're doing.
I'm
and
shook.
I was like,
my like jaws open.
Yeah, I was like very confused. But now when I think about it, neither of us were thriving in Dallas.
Uh-huh.
He's from Oakland.
Okay.
He grew up in a very different way than me. And I think he was trying to fit himself in that setting. And even me going back, I love my Dallas friends. I have so many good friends there and my family's close, but it's just not my place at all.
Yeah.
So it sucks because we love the house, but it's kind of a blessing in disguise. Yeah. We have to get an Airbnb or something because we don't know how long we'll be in the next destination because this season starts again in February.
Baseball life, man.
And he could be anywhere. So.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I only know a little bit about baseball life because one of my friends who I used to work with at the Trend Forecasting Company, she's also married to someone in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
And it's like they're in Florida. They're here. They're there. I'm like, I can't keep up.
I have a friend who her husband's going to get traded this week.
Uh-huh.
She had to pack up her whole house. She has a baby, too, in D.C. And he's going to get the call sometime today or tomorrow. Could be mid-game. Sometimes people get treated mid-game and they'll just tell him where he's got to go and she's got to get all of their stuff and their kid and everyone like settled where he'll be. And he will only be at that location for like 3 more months through the end of the season. And then he could go anywhere. Like it's literally absolute chaos. Like it makes no sense.
Oh my God. Yeah. But I feel like it keeps things exciting.
It does. And I grew up a military brat.
Yeah.
So like I can pretty much adapt to anything. I don't get intimidated by new places.
It probably prepped you for this.
It did.
Wow.
It did.
And you said you manifested Joe, right?
I manifested him, yes.
So how'd you do that?
So I moved here when I was 22, just like little background, and I was a raging psychopath. Like I was like gonna make the blog work, and I was writing on a blog at that point.
What was your blog called?
It was called Hustle and Halcyon.
Okay.
I'm like, I love like English and writing and stuff, and like obviously I would have chosen something easier to spell had I like, you know, if I look back on it.
I can't even, how
it's spelled, it's H-A-L-C-Y-O-N.
What does it mean?
It's like returning to like an inner peace.
Okay.
So to me, I'm like, ooh, this is vibey, but like branding. Branding is everything. But anyways, I loved blogging. That was my favorite thing to do. My writing has always been like my number one skill in life. And I moved out here. I was really pursuing that at first. And Lauren Bostic was a huge inspiration to me from the beginning. So it's crazy that I'm with Dear Media now, and I've told her this a million times already. But anyways, that left no time for like men. And what that meant for me was men were my weekend activity, and I would have like a full actual roster of people. And there was like five of them that were different than each other. And like, I would get done with work at like 6 p.m. I would draw a boundary and I'd be like, okay, I need to go out tonight. Text all my little dudes.
All five
and be like, what are we doing tonight? And then go with the best one. And I had a whole group of girlfriends. We all did the same thing. It was so much fun. And I didn't take any dating seriously at all.
Okay.
For a very long time. I had a brief intermission for a boyfriend at 24. It didn't last very long. So when I turned 26, I was like, I was kind of in a place with my job, my career, where I wasn't living paycheck to paycheck anymore. And I was like, gonna be able to pay my rent without, you know, having to really hustle. Like, I was literally like giving out samples at Whole Foods for an energy drink. I was babysitting. So there was no time. And I was like, okay, I can get a little more comfortable. And I feel like at 26, I do want to have children. I do want to, you know, do all these things. I need to like be in an actual relationship, because I was very scared of it, I think.
Okay.
I liked being independent and kind of taking things as a joke. Kind of. So I was laying in bed one day and it just really clicked to me. Like, I genuinely want to be in a relationship. And I was like, I'm going to draw out the exact guy that I want. No holds barred. I'm not going to judge myself for like whatever it is that I want.
Where'd you like, was it in your head? Did you put it on
paper? Yeah, because you're not supposed to say like, okay, I want someone who has money.
Yeah, of course.
And I was like, no, I want someone who has money. I'm going to make money. They need to have some money too. You know what I mean? And I was very honest with myself and I owned that. And I think that's also with confidence and getting older, just saying what you want out loud. So I remember laying in bed being like, and it wasn't like he needs to be insanely rich, but like comfortable.
Yeah.
And is
successful in his own.
Yeah. And like doing his own ambitious thing, because I know how I want my kids to grow up, you know, loosely, and it's going to take some cash. So I got to work hard. He's got to work hard. Anyways, I went through a whole list. I was like, I want him to be tall. I want him to be, I hadn't really dated anyone. I was super wanting to jump on sexually. So I was like, I want to feel like
sexy.
Yeah, I wanted to be so attracted to him. He doesn't need to be like conventionally hot, but I need to have like chemistry.
Okay.
Just all the things. Tall, close to his family. And I really focused on what I want to feel.
Okay.
And that was hard for me because at the time I'd never been in love before. So I was like, I want to be in love, even if it like is bad or ends up bad. Like, I'm totally willing to risk that. And I just went to sleep that night and I was like, I'm going to get it. And I didn't think about it one more time. It wasn't like I wasn't looking for it. But there was something in me that night that I was like, that's going to happen.
So then how soon after did you meet him? And you met him on Raya, right?
Yeah. Okay. So COVID started and we were actually, my family works during spring training in Scottsdale. They work in baseball, one of their little ventures. And we were there. I would go over from LA to Scottsdale and then they, you know, come from Texas to Scottsdale. So it was like our little meeting point. And I guess Joe was there for his spring training.
Mm.
And they shut it down in the middle of spring training. Like, everyone had to go home. So we matched on Raya then. And I didn't really take notice to him. Like, I wasn't thinking, like, this is the guy, you know, that I have been manifesting. And then we were talking on Raya for a little while. It just dried up, honestly. And I never thought about it again. And then, like, a week later, he DM'd me and I saw his Instagram. Which, of course, men on dating apps, they're not necessarily all the time pushing their best like photos forward. Yeah. So I saw him on Instagram and I was like, who is this guy? He's like fucking hot. And he said something, I think first on the dating app, he said something a little bit cringy, which like it's always going to be kind of cringy, but of course was like, I'm not answering that. That's weird. And then he found me on Instagram. We started talking. And then I think I didn't notice until I met him, which was like probably a month and a half later, that like this was the exact person that I asked for. But and he just didn't go away until I noticed.
Yeah.
Which I feel like that's why I was like, oh, I manifested him. Because like, I feel like sometimes you don't realize the things that you're wanting. You don't notice them coming into your life.
Totally.
Until it like literally hits you over the head.
Well, I think manifestation's just, I preach about it all the time. And I think it was the first, right before I started Set Active, I was making a vision board with my friend Sydney. And I put so many things on there. I put like an engagement ring. I wanted to get engaged to who's now my husband at the time. Forbes 30 under 30 I put on there. I put so many things on there. I think I put like Set Active 100K on there, like 100K followers.
Yeah, you got specific.
Yes. Yeah. Like, and I mean, I got specific. Mm-hmm. And everything on the vision board in a weird way, like, came true. Mm-hmm. I didn't get Forbes 30 under 30 that year, but I did end up getting Forbes 30 under 30. And I did get engaged to my husband. And Set did hit 100K followers. I think it was, like, the year after I did that or something. And I don't necessarily think it's the act of, like, cutting out images and, like, putting the exact thing on the vision board. But I think it's the act of, like, attracting what you want and having it live somewhere. I made one for this year. I haven't checked it. I always like to check it at the end of the year mm-hmm. and like look back and see yeah. like what I accomplished from the vision board.
Well, but I think the visual is important.
It is.
And also there's an aspect to it that's like people will be like, okay, if you can manifest anything, why aren't you going to manifest $200 million tomorrow? And you're like, because I don't believe I'm going to do that. You yeah. know what I mean? There's a certain level of like, I actually believe this is going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not like me finding a boyfriend at that point at 26. I knew enough about myself. I was like, it's just going to happen. Like it's totally. Not, and it, like you were saying, like maybe it doesn't happen that year, but it happens or that week or whatever it is. It happens in time and it doesn't allow, it stays in your life enough until you like actually see it and notice it in your life, I feel like.
Totally.
But it's not, you have to know, maybe not attached to a timeline. I think that's a really important part of manifestation that people forget. Like they're like, yeah. oh, well, I'm waiting on my manifestation to come in. You're like, you just have to relax.
Yeah.
Be patient.
That's why I like to like set it and forget it, because I feel like you subconsciously already start to attract those things like mm-hmm. in the back of your mind because you now like have put it all out on the table. And then I think it all starts to like unfold. Yeah. Obviously, like my life does not go perfect. I've fought with friends. I've lost friends this year. Mm-hmm. I've had some really huge setbacks at Set. I've tried to navigate my relationship with my husband now that we have a 1-year-old and about to have a second child, two mm-hmm. under two. Like it's, we moved, we renovated, like
yeah.
my whole life sort of got flipped upside down this year. And I feel like I'm like hitting the reset button, but that's why like, I'm so excited to kind of look back at this vision board that is saved on my desktop, because I want to see like if all of these things that have happened for a reason or whatever it might be, because this year I have been tested.
Yeah.
Like no other.
yeah.
So I'm excited to see like maybe that's the beauty of everything that's happened, is it was supposed to happen for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I want to get back to talking about you, especially because we just recorded Peyton's podcast before this, Note to Self, mm-hmm. and spent the whole time talking about me to the point where at one point I was like, that was the longest-winded answer in the history of time, and now I feel like I'm going to, like, pass out from being out of breath.
I kind of love it. I love it. I love being able to be like, yeah, and then you, and I yeah. just sit here and, like, be a sponge.
I also have a 2-pound baby sitting on my lungs right now. Poor Peyton, I'm sitting here, I'm yawning because I'm trying to get oxygen, and yeah. it's not because I'm tired. I'm just, like, really need as much oxygen in my system as possible.
Well, I just mainline coffee, so I get it. I get it.
Okay, so you had your blog. It was in 2015 that you started it. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And when did you start to see, like, I feel like people aren't actually blogging these days anymore.
No, they
and they're
aren't.
Like, everything is turning visual, from Reels to TikTok to Instagram. Mm-hmm. So for someone who's so immersed in social media and is an influencer, mm-hmm. how do you foresee the trends that are coming, or like how to keep up with the trends? Like, how did you know, like, okay, it's time to close the chapter of the blog and now I'm going to put my energy and focus towards this? I mean, so many people ask me this question in fashion, like mm-hmm. how do you stay ahead, how do you know what's coming? But I feel like social media as a career too, like you have to kind of know what's coming.
Going on. Yeah. I will say, like, part of the reason I moved to LA is because the trends start here.
Okay.
So I feel like living in Texas would be a bit of a disadvantage now with how much we're all connected. It's a little bit different, but I feel like being in Los Angeles helped me a lot. And I've never been the person to be like, I need to be ahead of trends. I need to do this. I feel like I try my hand at a lot of things, and it's hard for me to give up when maybe things aren't going the way that I want. I will say the blog was one of my biggest successes in social, like my whole journey in social, because my skill is in writing.
Okay.
And my skill is in narrative and sharing my own experience and doing so in a way that I guess people understand. And so when that went out the window, I had to give that up because it was taking a lot of time for such little reward.
Okay.
Because also it's a business. I need to make money. A lot of brands weren't doing blog anymore.
Yeah.
So I moved more to like YouTube and Instagram. I like YouTube a lot. I like consuming YouTube content. It takes a lot longer to do. But Instagram has never inspired me, to be honest.
Yeah.
I do like connecting with my audience, but I'm a big boundary drawer on that part because I don't have time to answer a bunch of DMs all the time. I'm doing a million different things because I am on literally every platform you could be on right now. And I'm trying to learn how to like kind of let go of Instagram a little bit more, honestly, because I'm not loving it. And I think it's less trend based and like where the eyes are going, because there's always some incentive to go where the eyes are going. But it's just learning what I'm good on.
Yeah.
And I think I found podcast, and it reminded me of a return to the blog. Because it was just, it's like a written story.
But verbally.
Verbally. Yeah. And it's, I mean, I'm going through the same process thinking about things, and it feels creative and it feels long form and it feels like less vapid. Not to say you can make Instagram not vapid. You can share really important things, and the visual aid is really helpful for, you know, some things, especially like for set, you share a lot of stuff there.
Yeah.
But for me, it's less about trend and more about where am I being showcased the best? And I will say I'm not always the best at leaving things that aren't going well naturally and like trying to force them, when really I should just kind of focus energy on what's actually flowing.
Yeah. I feel like, and this might be a hot take, it might not be, but I feel like what I'm loving about social media, I know I can't believe I'm saying something that I'm loving about social mm-hmm. media because so many people shit on it these days, but I'm loving that influencers and celebrities are just shifting away from this curated life and more about their real life and like mm-hmm. where they're finding themselves, you know, the most. And I feel like so many more people are sharing their opinions openly and it's, or at least that's the people that I'm following. I've cut out like all the negative people that, mm-hmm. you know, affected my mental health. And I found that like when I started to do that, I enjoy going on the platform. I enjoy going on TikTok. I don't really watch YouTube that much. I would say like my two most used social platforms are TikTok and Instagram for sure. But I use my Instagram like short form YouTube videos on stories.
Yeah.
Like my caterpillar line at the top mm-hmm. is always so long. Yeah. And then I get insecure about how long it is because I share so many moments of my days, my thoughts, products that I like, all of this stuff. I wish I could like be that person who does the voiceovers on TikTok. And mm-hmm. I went up to my TikTok intern the other day. I was like, Ella, how do I do this?
Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah, and she was like, it's so easy. You just download this app. You upload. I was like, oh God, no way.
We already went two steps too far. Yeah.
Instagram just makes it easy for me to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I love that. Like in a way you're like kind of beating to the beat of your own drum for being an influencer. Mm-hmm. Like you're doing what works for you. And I think that's part of the reason why you're so successful as an influencer and creator is because you're not like following a rule book mm-hmm. of like what an influencer has to do. You're finding what works for you.
Yeah.
And then sharing your life that way.
I think also what you said about influencers moving to less curated content, it's like the rebirth of influencing, which is something I'm really liking because I'm not honestly, I'm good at aesthetics, but it's not my best thing. And I think I could be good at it, but I just don't like it. Like I like it to an extent, but I don't want it to be my whole brand. I'm always just the chronic oversharer.
Yeah.
I want to talk about stuff with my audience at least. And I don't want my social platform to be images or like just pretty things. As much as I do like to consume that content sometimes, I've loved being able to try the different everything out, TikTok, Instagram, whatever, figuring out how I use those things best and how I can showcase myself best. And it's hard to do that because you have to really know yourself and know what works for you. And one way that I do that, and one thing that my manager said to me is the reason they brought me on, was a lot of my friends have more, let's say, Instagram followers than me. They're very aesthetically driven. They're fucking amazing at Instagram, like so good at it. And my management was like, we want to have you on because you have a very healthy social ecosystem.
Yeah.
So you're doing a lot of different things. And maybe like you feel like an imposter because your Instagram following isn't as big as your friends or people that you know who are doing great. But you do podcast and YouTube and TikTok, and you're doing all of these things pretty well. So that's one thing I think people forget about when you're being an influencer is sometimes it's not about following as much as it is engagement and being able to create a ecosystem of social media channels.
Yeah, totally.
Which people don't talk about enough.
I don't think people talk about it enough. Well, that and imposter syndrome enough at all. Mm-hmm. Like I've had brands, I was going through my Instagram requests last night and everyone's like, you always say that you have all these Instagram requests, but you only have 27,000 followers. I was like, if you could just see my Instagram requests mm-hmm. right now. And it's because I think I am very engaging with my own community. Like I get thousands and thousands of views on my stories. Mm-hmm. And I get lots of comments on my, like, when I do post, which is like once every month. I have no energy to
post. You're an engagement queen.
Yeah. But anyways, I want to take it back to you, because my podcast is obviously called Ready, Set, Spill. Mm-hmm. I like to talk about things that people don't normally know about that person or haven't heard them say. And mm-hmm. so, like, being on the internet, which is already a hard job to do, what would you say has been, like, the hardest part about being on the internet, or what do you get criticism for and how do you deal with that?
I think the hardest part is that you can always be working. So I have boundaries. I don't have good boundaries in my life. I'm always on my phone. I feel like anxious if I'm not working because I have the ability to. My boyfriend, for example, I was just talking about this morning. He goes to work and he comes home from work and he does nothing.
Yeah.
He's done with work. In his off season, which is about 4 months long, he'll go to, you know, physical therapy, or he'll go to workouts for an hour or two a day. He comes home. He's done with work. And for me, it's really hard as a person who's obsessive and very, like, I like to be productive. I come from a family that's very, like, excellence is key and productivity is key and you always should be doing something, like, very much like the glorification of busy. It's hard for me to turn it off mm-hmm. and, like, take a break. And so that's been the hardest thing for me. I think in terms of criticism, that's kind of hard. People criticize a lot of influencers. I'm not the only one, but they criticize a lot, saying that you're kind of only showing the happiest moments of your life. And I get mm-hmm. this with my relationship. You're only sharing the good stuff. Why are you not sharing the bad stuff? And that's a criticism I can take, because I'm like, I'm not going to share Joe's, like, dirty laundry. I'm not going to, like, be going on a mic on a podcast or something and be like, well, then Joe said this and I said this and, like, we got in this fight. We will discuss arguments and things or problems that we had later once mm-hmm. it's not, like, a actual, like, issue still. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I do hear a lot, you're painting things in a perfect light, which I don't personally think that I do. So I talk about antidepressants. I talk about both anxiety and depression. I talk about sex. I talk about, like, just stupid things I've done in my entire, like, I talked about getting arrested and, like, being in jail
before. You've been arrested? You've been in jail before? What do you mean? For what?
Well,
an MIP?
A PI for the first time. Okay. But, like, it was, like, a disaster where, like, I got the PI and then I was, like, I'm going to go home. And they were, like, okay. And then I was, like, I, like, went around a building and, like, ran to the next bar. And then they found me later on my college, like, going out campus.
Oh,
and they
my God.
Handcuffed me and put me in the middle of the whole going out, like, square.
Yeah.
And then, like, when everyone left the bars, like, I was just sitting there on the ground handcuffed. And of course I'm like, I am my mother's daughter. We're, like, the most insane. When I get drunk, I'm like, thanks for getting me off the streets. Like, I'm glad you really caught a good one. Like,
oh my God.
I was like, when I say a psychopath, like, I literally mean a psychopath. But anyway, so I got arrested for that. And then there was one other thing that I just haven't really talked about before that I'm not going to say, but I got arrested and then I had to, like, serve time in jail for that.
You served time in jail?
Well, it was supposed to be, oh, like, 10 days and I served, like, 26 hours.
That is crazy.
Mm-hmm. I also, though, I'm, like, the person that's, like, I do not glorify jail. Please do not go to jail. But I'm the person that's, like, when I am in a situation like that, it's like a sociological experiment.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's kind of a little bit funny and interesting. And it's just, I don't feel weird in situations like that. I mean, yeah. Of course, it's not comfortable. No one wants to be in jail. But, like, it was kind of funny.
Well, I'm sure it wasn't funny at the time, but it's funny now.
Yeah. But PI part was really funny. That was funny because I woke up the next morning and the girls in jail were, like, serving time for, like, tickets or something.
Yeah.
And they were like, you were crazy last night. And I was like, what did I do? And I was, like, yelling at some girl in jail because she was being annoying to all of us and, like, not letting us sleep. She got a DUI, I guess. And, like, she was pounding on the doors being like, I'm not drunk. I'm not drunk. And I was trying to sleep and I was blackout drunk. So I was like, shut up. Like, literally, we're all trying to sleep. And all the girls in jail are like, what the fuck? And I was wearing, the best part is I was wearing a sequin dress and go-go boots.
Oh.
And I have huge blonde hair and my tits were on my face. And I was like, if you don't shut up, we all know you're drunk. And all the girls are like, oh, who is this girl?
They probably wanted to keep you there so you could run the town.
They thought it was hilarious.
Oh,
those
my
are my
God.
Friends.
Okay.
Those are my buds.
Well,
anyways.
Taking it away from
back,
jail.
Yeah.
Don't go to jail.
Don't go to jail. Please
don't go
to jail.
I feel like I was just having this conversation with one of my, like, best friends this weekend. We were away, just like a little staycation in Santa Barbara. And we were just talking about relationships and, like, she's like, do you ever just, like, want to throw your hands in the air and give up with, like, your relationship? And I was like, of course. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like people need to remember that we're human. And I mean, if you're not fighting with your partner, I'm concerned.
You're not sharing enough.
Yeah, you're not sharing enough. You're not growing in your relationship. Mm-hmm. And I have friends who say that they never fight. They either A, don't want to share with me that they fight, or B, think that what the types of conversations they're having isn't a fight.
Yeah, yeah.
But, or an argument or whatever it might be.
Yeah, we try to call it arguments.
Yeah, argument, yeah, not
that's
a
what
fight.
We try to say.
And I was just like thinking about it with my husband, and like, we don't fight. We argue over certain things, but mm-hmm. like, my therapist has taught me to like say, get to the why. Like, why is this upsetting you, rather than like saying that this is upsetting me?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this on my podcast, but one of the things that I'm struggling with right now in my relationship with Garrett is mm-hmm. he's not a baby guy. He doesn't know how to like be around them. He doesn't mm-hmm. know how to act with them. Not that this would have changed anything, but I wish we would have talked about that before mm-hmm. maybe having kids, to like see what kind of dad he was going to be. Mm-hmm. But it's been rough, the mm-hmm. transition, because I always envisioned my partner being very hands-on, being a team with me. And don't get me wrong, Garrett is a team player. Like, yes. if I was like, I need you for bath time tonight, mm-hmm. He'll do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So he is a team player in that way, but it's just very different than I envisioned. Don't get me wrong, we still have to communicate about a lot of things with parenting, mm-hmm. but becoming a parent with your partner is a whole different ballgame. And so many things come to the surface that you would never in a million years think you would have to talk about.
Yeah.
That really test your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where the hell I was going with this conversation.
Well, we're talking about like things in your relationship that like, you know, they come up and you have arguments and things like that.
Is that like you were saying that on social media, like everyone thinks you paint this perfect picture, like it's your choice what you want to share. Mm-hmm. And like people are following you probably for that reason.
Yes.
So like if you're not liking what you're posting or what she's posting, then just unfollow her.
You don't have to. You don't have to follow. But also I'm like, I'm sure when we go to the Bahamas, we're like the happiest we've ever been, like
of
on
course.
The beach in Bahamas. Like I'm not going to not share that. And honestly, too, like in the middle of your fight or your argument, and it's similar to like I say all the time when I'm having like a panic attack or something. I don't think to reach for my phone and be like, wait, let me get this on video.
I was just going to say,
you know
like,
what I mean?
You're not going to take your phone and set it up and be like, okay, wait, Joe and I are fighting. Hold on. Save that thought. Let me get this on Instagram. Let me film it. Let me cut it together and let me post it on the gram.
Like it's also so invasive of his like
of
private
course.
Life. Like I have to respect him. And I'm also the person, I am an oversharer.
Yeah.
So that kind of comment doesn't get to me, but I do get it a lot because I'm like, wait a couple months and then him and I will go on a podcast together and
we'll
share how we got something, like got through something, which we do a lot. But I think it's also important to share things like that. But it is the boundaries thing. I have an easy time putting boundaries around the people I love.
Okay.
Less so my own self. But I can put a boundary around him and our relationship. And as much as it's something I would share, if he doesn't want me to share it, then I don't share it.
Yeah. I love that about your – I feel like that's something we were talking about in the – when we were recording on your podcast. Mm-hmm. I feel like your respect for Joe is like – so respectable because I feel like it just protects your relationship mm-hmm. for someone who's so public, and he obviously is somewhat in the public eye as well,
a
different reason, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like people still know who he is
mm-hmm.
and I love that about you guys. But you said that you suffer from panic attacks.
Mm-hmm.
What does a panic attack look like for you? Because what I've noticed, I also have anxiety. I'm on Zoloft. I take it every single night.
Mm-hmm.
It's also pregnancy safe anxiety medication.
Ooh, lovely.
So love that for me. But I've noticed that anxiety for people like look almost like case by case.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't met like the same anxiety for the same person. Like my panic attack is probably very different from yours. So I want my like listeners to know what a panic attack for someone who looks like they have it all together on social media.
Maybe doesn't. So I will say it's been a long time since I've had a true panic attack. I had them a lot when I was growing up. And I think it had a lot to do with my body just not feeling safe where I lived, with the people I was around. I love my family so much, but I'm very, very different from them. And I feel like I was just always very confused.
Uh-huh.
I also have, like, from the day I was making memories in my brain that I remember, depression and anxiety are a huge part of my life.
Yeah.
And it runs in my family. We have it majorly. There hasn't been a day that I have not had it. So that on top of like very triggering things around me and being confused and not understanding what anxiety is, I used to have massive panic attacks, like up to the point that I left and came to LA, honestly, where I have never had a problem with food, really, besides when I get anxiety attacks. I binge eat, like, a lot to, like, sedate myself when I was younger. So I'd be, like, the world felt like it was coming down around me. I would get triggered by something or some kind of chemical thing would happen. I don't know. To this point, I honestly don't know. Sometimes it would trigger me. And I'd be in the pantry, sobbing, crying, eating everything I could possibly eat in order to sedate myself. And I did that for a long time. I was just, like, of my friends, I was, like, the one that ate literally everything.
Yeah.
Friends, like, how do you fit that in your body? Because I just wanted to be, like, Thanksgiving level full, which is kind of a different thing that people don't say a lot. But I got on a medication when I was 19, for a short little stint, on just, like, the daily anxiety medication. And I found out what anxiety was because I was, you know, quote unquote normal. And I was like, holy shit, I can't believe, like, people live like this.
Yeah.
You know, and I had, like, enough serotonin in my brain. I was like, this is wild. This is people's, like, everyday life.
Are you still on medication?
So I got off for, like, 10 years and I got back on 2 months ago because it was a recurring thing in my relationship with Joe that I was very just edgy and he's very calm.
Yeah.
And I felt like I didn't want to be back on medication, but I think I needed to do it in order to just have, like, a serene home life.
Why do you think you did? I'm asking this question because I have a similar story, different anxiety than yours, different panic attacks. But I was on medication and then I went off for a very long time.
Yes.
And I also recently just went back on.
Mm-hmm.
So why? And I had the same thought, like, I didn't really want to go back on. But why didn't you want to go back on medication?
I think I was judging myself.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, I don't want to put all the stuff in my body. I don't want to take these, you know, medications if I don't have to, because I'm not on birth control either. And I just didn't like the idea of so many pharmaceuticals. That's a lot to keep up with. When I was in college, though, I went and studied abroad when I was on medication and I left my meds on a plane. And I had horrible withdrawals and I was in a different country. I couldn't get any medications. I was having, like, what they call brain zaps. I was throwing up. And so that was a horrible experience, obviously. And I use that excuse, like, well, that one time I was 21 and stupid and left my meds on a plane. Like, I was saying, like, I just don't want that to happen again. So I'm never going to be on these medications. So I was like, I'm going to suffer through it. This is, like, my thing to do. Like, I'm very lucky in my life in a lot of ways. So, like, if this is a thing I have to deal with, like, fine, I'll just deal with it. And I was doing all these things to manage anxiety, like trying to work out and then trying to get up in the morning and journal and meditate and all these things. And at some point, that became more stressful than just even having the anxiety. So I got on the meds, like I said, 2 months ago, and they are so helpful. When I found the right, like, I found the right ones for me, I'm on Effexor, which is an SNRI, and it affects your norepinephrine, which is, like, adrenaline, and serotonin both, because the SSRIs didn't work on me. But anyways, I found my good dose, and it has been life-changing. I mean, it was within, like, 2 weeks in.
I think that's so important that you're talking about that, though, because, like, if you think you have to go on anxiety medication, which, by the way, there's nothing wrong with like needing something to help you balance out your anxiety. I've learned, because I also didn't want to go back on anxiety, but also I really like, educate yourself on the different types of medicine. Make sure you like your psychiatrist, be honest with your psychiatrist. Like, you can't be embarrassed to say how you're feeling, how something makes you feel, because they're going to probably put you on the wrong medication, which is what happened to me the first time that I did it. And I think that's why I was so scared to go back on, because it was the first couple years of dating Garrett, who's now my husband. And I was on, like, a whole cocktail of anxiety medications.
Yeah.
And I was a zombie. Like, it wasn't, yes, my anxiety was leveled, but I was like, hello, knock, knock, who's there? Like, is anyone home? Like, are the lights on? Like, it was, if you knew me during that time, I was basically, like, just a human walking. Like, I didn't have emotion. And then I also became addicted to Xanax.
Okay, yeah.
Pretty badly.
That's a whole nother thing. I had a lot of friends in college that did that. I was always prescribed it. Like, there were multiple times I went to doctors, like, just regular primary care physicians.
Yeah.
And they're like, what's your life like? And I'm explaining. I've had doctors, like, writing something down in the corner. And I'm like, what are you writing over there? And they're like, I'm just going to give you some Xanax just in case you need this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it can be dangerous. And it's hard to find the right dosage, because if you have too much of a certain medication, I was a zombie for a little while too in college. Like, it takes away everything. Like, you just are numb, but also depression made me really numb. So I was like, which numb do I want to be?
That's why I like my psychiatrist now, because she makes me do these check-ins every month. And she, like, she was like, we just had one and it was over the phone because I was too busy to do a Zoom. I forget what happened, but it was over the phone. She's like, you know what? instead of a 3 month check-in, we're going to do next month because I feel like you weren't really there today. Mm-hmm. And I she really want to get an accurate reading of like how the dosage is working out. I was like, how do you know?
Yeah.
Like I really wasn't there, but I was very addicted to Xanax. Like not in the like, I wanted to fit in with like a cool crowd.
No, quote, yeah, unquote. Yeah.
I was taking it to fall asleep. I was taking it to mm-hmm. just like feel normal the whole nine yards. And my mom had an addiction problem. Garrett was like, I can't be with you if you're going to continue this like Xanax addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So I stopped cold turkey, which was like really hard. And then I went so many years and then I'm back on anxiety medication, but the right dose.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do have Xanax, but I don't abuse it. I obviously can't take it pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have my anxiety attack, like I have to be calmed down right then and there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there's that's it.
That's like, how I have family members who are like that. Like I have a family member who has to take Xanax because literally he couldn't function. He is in such an uproar, and which is totally fine. I think there's a huge thing about judging yourself with medications and judging yourself even if you get to a point where you're addicted.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, and I say luckily, it's kind of weird to say, but I have a lot of friends who have dealt with ups and downs of drugs and alcohol, and knowing them through and through, it's been a I just like am not judgmental about that kind of stuff. And therefore, I don't judge myself if I'm taking anxiety medication.
Yeah.
But I had to get to that point by being like, it's just chemicals. Like you just need a chemical change.
You need
change.
To balance them out.
And this experience has been amazing. And it's really done, you know, it's worked wonders for my job and also for my relationship.
Yeah. Same sister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't expecting to really dive into like anxiety and all of that and like medication, but every time I do talk about it on my podcast, whether mm-hmm. it's with the guest or they're being open, my listeners always write in and they're like, I think you changed my life today.
Yeah.
And so I'm really glad that you were open about talking about it. And if you guys have questions and want to hear like more about Peyton's journey, I mean, I know you're super engaging on your own Instagram. I know it's not your favorite platform, but you're always answering questions. And I love your ask anythings all the time. I always
Thank
read them.
You.
And I know I always say this and I'm looking at Caitlin because she's going to laugh, but I want to do a part two with you where I talk mm-hmm. all about your journey to entrepreneurship, because mm-hmm. I feel like that's a whole different world that you tapped into that I think you're doing right. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to like see everything that is unfolding and talk about everything that's unfolding. So if you're willing to come on again, I want to do like
absolutely.
A part two about your entrepreneurship journey.
That would be
or
great.
Else this episode's going to be 2 hours long. Peyton does have a clothing line called Wear Full Disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about that journey, how you started it, where it's going, what are your plans for it,
all
that stuff. But to round things out,
mm-hmm.
I always ask my guests, if there's like one piece of advice that you can leave with my listeners, what would it be?
Okay, well, one piece of advice I feel like that has carried me through the last, and getting back to the entrepreneurship thing, there's so much I could say that's like carried me through the past, like, I don't know, 6 years or so, like doing my job and like creating a company and starting a podcast. One thing that's really important for me to always remind myself of every day when I'm feeling overwhelmed or I don't know what I want to do with myself today, or if I don't know where I want to go, what direction I want to take things, is that no one else really knows what they're doing either.
Yeah.
And to just go out and do things and create things and kind of just pave your own path, get up every day and do exactly, you know, do what excites you that day. And just don't judge yourself if you don't have everything all figured out.
I love that.
Just move in a certain direction. I feel like your listeners like look up to you because you built this great brand as like an entrepreneur, but sometimes when you're first starting, and even if you're deep in it, you forget and you judge yourself and you're like, well, I don't know, I have imposter syndrome, no one, like everyone knows better than me, when really like no one knows what
everyone's
they're doing.
And
we're all making it up.
Yeah, totally. I love that like every time I have someone on, their piece of advice is always different.
Mm-hmm.
So I love walking away with something different time. If people want to follow you and your podcast, which is now mm-hmm. with Dear Media, where can they find you?
So my Instagram is at Peyton Sarton. YouTube, same thing. You just type in Peyton Sarton. TikTok, same exact thing. My podcast,
queen.
Right? My podcast is Note to Self. There's socials for all of those for the podcast as well. I'm loving TikTok for the podcast right now, actually. It's like my favorite thing. To touch on the medication thing, I have an episode called Hot Girls Take Their Meds. It's a very recent episode that I did about the choice to get back on medication and more of my experience with anxiety and depression. So that might be nice to listen to if you like that topic.
I'm sure they will. Yeah. And now you know you can find a whole episode on it. And we will do. I'm sorry to leave everyone hanging. I did have entrepreneurship planned in this podcast episode. The conversation just went a different path, but I will bring Peyton back on. We can talk all about your journey to being an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so excited for that one too.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to follow us on your podcast listening platform. Share your favorite moments with me on social media and tune in next week. Again, I'm your host, Lindsay Carter, and this is Ready, Set, Spill.